Flyweight Diary. I'm your host, Eric Holler, boxing indoor in a weird Philadelphia cheesesteak shop with my man, Brett Smith.
How's it going?
This guy is a filmmaker. He made a film called Hypothesis. Tell me about it.
Well, basically, Hypothesis started out as a student film for one of my classes. And during the time, there was this professor at BYU causing a big controversy with his 9/11 research. And so I thought that would be an interesting piece to do. So I kind of followed him around. I did a short for my class, and then I decided I needed to pursue that story further because it was much more broad than I originally thought.
So this humble little guy just gets these big ideas in his head. What initially got you interested?
What initially got me started was I was attending UVSC at the time. So I was attending UVSC at the time it all happened. And the first I ever heard about Steve Jones was that he was going to do a talk at my school. And that was the first I ever heard this idea. Mm-hmm. And I was pretty skeptical at first because I had no idea. There was this idea that the NIST report was wrong and that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. So that's really what piqued my interest.
This little guy starts talking about, like, in scientific terms, and he's very credible. He gives his credibility to it as a chemistry professor. When he starts saying, hey, listen, I think that there's something more to these dust samples. Like, he got some dust samples and is like, wait a minute, what's going on here?
Initially, when I saw these red gray chips, I looked at them just because they were unusual. I didn't have any guess as to what they might be. I explored the nature of these chips using the electron microscope system, and sure enough, they contain the thermitic material. This society is mesmerized by this myth, this official story of 9/11 being due to the Muslims. Everyone knows it. You can't challenge this myth. If you do, you're a conspiracy kook. Well, I'm sorry, good science cuts through all that nonsense.
I first got into Stephen Jones in like February 2010. He posted that 2-hour lecture about the subject, and I just saw it because I was like, I heard from a friend in college, you know, hey, you gotta check out this guy, and it like, you know, changed everything. You know, that thing opens the doors in your brain.
And as you notice, it dips in the middle, falls straight down, and very rapidly. And that's B, World Trade Center 7. Over here we have a large, as you see, a high rise in Madrid, Spain, last year, that burned. It was an inferno for about 24 hours. It did not collapse. And indeed, there has been no example, at least none before 9/11, 2001, where fire has caused a building to collapse completely. So this is A, but that is, in fact, the official explanation of the collapse of Building 7, that it was due to fire. Now, this is a controlled demolition with explosives, different views. This is in Norway, Oslo, as I recall, and shows, again, the straight down, rapid collapse.
Anyway, I apologize to the audience. We kind of have some cheesesteaks and fries in front of us.
It's cool, I like it.
But we're, gonna keep things moving. This hypothesis, which really cuts the meat and matter. Who is this guy? What is it? Are his theories credible whatsoever? So you ran it at a 9/11 Truth Festival in San Francisco, and you sold it on DVD, and now it's on YouTube. Did you put it on YouTube, or did the internet kind of put it on YouTube for you?
The internet kind of did it, and then I just kind of went along with it, too, so...
You know. I mean, they are stealing your movie when, I mean, you are charging like $30 for the DVD, right?
I think it's like $15, but...
Oh, okay.
I feel like it serves a greater purpose to be available on as many platforms as you can. So, you know, like, I wasn't in it initially to make money. I just kind of wanted to cover the debt that I got into making the film. So... I try to include like a bunch of extras to entice people to buy the DVD, but ultimately I just want people to see it just because it's a form of, you know, it's like a craft, a form of art that I just wanted to express. So.
And what a better like underdog story. It's like you're making, I think, one of the most poignant and salient and condensed It's only 45 minutes, but check out this movie, Hypothesis. It's on YouTube. You really owe it to yourself.
Thank you.
Because it's a beautiful story about an underdog guy trying to just be a professor and just go, this is science. This is what science tells us about the dust samples. That's it. He gets fired for it.
I was put on administrative leave, which indeed was painful. And a little bit surprising, I must say. So, I mean, there wasn't much said to me.
Brian, why is BYU taking action against his statements?
For a couple of reasons, Mark. First, what Jones has said, and second, what the university suspects he has not done with his research.
In the talking, did you just get more and more endeared to Stephen Jones and just see what a genuinely nice guy he was? Like, that's what really comes across.
Well, thanks for saying that. Yeah, and that's what I was hoping would come across, because the more I did talk to him, like you said, the more you kind of feel this. There's like this really deep story. It almost mirrors like the hero's journey in a way.
And you, also being an underdog, I mean, you know, we're in some place in the middle of California. You know, this is not in a well-funded studio. I just had my Zoom recorder in the middle of a restaurant, but yeah, we're underdogs too. You're the underdog who made this movie. It's always the voice of the whoever's saying the most revolutionary thing is usually saying it from an underfunded basement. Doesn't always get published though.
No, that's cool. I wasn't aware that it had reached so far, so that's really cool. I'm really glad that like you were able to find it.
Yeah, you know, actually my sister met you at the San Francisco premiere of it at the 9/11 Truth Film Festival.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so she was living in San Francisco at the time, and I bought her tickets because I saw the preview, and I was like, yes, finally, someone made the story. Because if you watch, no one has the time to watch the 2-hour and 18-minute online, you know, original Google video that of Stephen Jones giving this data when the first 45 minutes is a disclaimer about how he wants to make sure everyone's cool, we're all cool.
The goal tonight I have in mind is to preserve constitutional law in the United States. Now, I love America, and I love the Constitution, of which Patrick Henry, George Washington, Ben Franklin, you know the list. My daughter knows the list better than I. She studied the Revolutionary War at length. These men were considered rebels. We call them patriots, but the British called them rebels because they wanted independence. They wanted freedom. They wanted certain rights, a freedom of religion, freedom of speech. We have these. And I hope we'll continue, you know, with these. The truth shall make you
free.
Right. So let's see if we can get some truth going, shall we?
There's a bad guy in your movie. Every good documentary has a bad guy. And your guy was this guy called C. Martin Hinckley. Tell me about C. Martin Hinckley.
I was kind of interested in getting all points of perspective, and he told me, you know, basically I asked him, well, who's been your biggest critic? And he gave me this guy's name. So, and then it just kind of unraveled this other, like, story within a story. And, so interviewing him was quite interesting.
Now, he's listed as an email sender in your documentary.
Yeah.
C. Martin Hinckley, email sender. That's pretty vague. Yeah. Was he ever tied to... He had a lot of government contracts and stuff, right? What was his background?
In his credentials, it said that he worked for, you know, like, Sandia's National Laboratory and governmental agencies and stuff like that. And he began this, like... You know, he was very critical of what Stephen was doing, and they had this email exchange that was pretty heated, I guess. It got pretty heated. So that's really where it kind of developed from there.
Didn't he suggest to Stephen Jones that he could make a lot more money if he pursued other research, alternative research?
Yeah, from what Stephen told me and from what the email said, he was just kind of saying, you know, stay away from this research, focus on this, it's better for public safety, that sort of thing.
Where it's like, don't try to uncover the biggest conspiracy ever. How about look at soil erosion in Egypt? And it's like, when you start, like, you know, analyzing the bullet that went through JFK's head, you don't really feel like looking at pigeons in Paraguay. Like, this is what he's on to. And what I thought, the argument against Stephen Jones in C. Martin Hinckley's, it was very disturbing because it made very little sense. He seemed like a sensible man, a man of science, this C. Martin Hinckley. But this was an argument he used.
A classic example is one professor believed that a certain reaction would cause columns to fail. And so he was publishing combinations of chemicals that would do this. You know, that's, you're way beyond the what you should do. If you believe that that is really a successful way of attacking a building, you know, we shouldn't be giving people ideas of how to do that. That's not an appropriate behavior.
Writing this document about your scientific research, like in a peer review, like that's some kind of smut that needs to be censored because you're going to give terrorists bad ideas. It's like, are you even listening to a fragment of what this man is saying instead of like turning his peer review thing into like a dirty magazine?
Mm-hmm.
Just a smut to be censored. Unbelievable.
The official NIST report concludes that fire brought the buildings down. So isn't that a danger to public safety too? Like,
right.
You know,
that report is making so many people terrorists. No, because that really, the kids are really reading those reports. You know, they're getting in the hands of the kids these scientific reports, and they need to be. These are giving people the wrong map. His mind just defrags, and when he's babbling like that, I can just feel like the like satanic programming he went to in some underground bunker. Like the way he talks about this is like he's from a different planet. I find a lot of people when you bring up 9/11, you bring up the alternative theory, they just start going, well, how could that even, where would that even, and it's like, let's deal with the facts step by step. Look at this reasonable man. He got sacked as a professor because he tested dust samples and talked about the results.
The 5-pointed star.
Was everybody kind of talking about it? Like, I had this wacky professor. You wouldn't believe what he's saying. Like, what was kind of the buzz on campus?
I think it was a pretty big deal. Unfortunately, I wasn't really on BYU campus while it was all going down a whole lot. You know, like, most of my time was spent in, like, Steve Jones's office. But it was a pretty big deal around Utah County. You know, like, everyone was talking about it. It was on the news a lot. Like, you know, you would hear about him getting suspended and then retiring early and that sort of thing. So there were definitely people talking about it. I would have liked to have gotten more of the BYU perspective, but I just didn't have enough people at the time to really...
Willing to talk about it?
Yeah. Or just, like, you know, enough manpower to kind of interview the students and things like that.
What do you do now?
Right now I'm going to film school, just trying to finish that up and sharpen my skills better.
In Utah?
Mm-hmm.
You're going to grad school?
Yeah.
Get your master's of filmmaking?
Hopefully, yeah.
I say hypothesis is your fucking doctorate
of
filmmaking, man. Look at that shit.
Thank you.
That was just going virally, now it's free on the internet, blowing minds wherever it goes.
I hope so, yeah.
And is it true it took like 5 years?
Yeah, it took me quite a while. I was, like, working full-time. I had to drop out of school to finish it. And, you know, it just slowly but surely got done. I basically bought a Mac and all my equipment just to do that film.
Are you you're from Utah, obviously. Are you Mormon?
I was raised Mormon, but I've kind of been inactive since then, I guess is the proper term.
Inactive? What does that mean?
Not attending, that sort of thing.
So would you consider yourself a Mormon, or would you consider yourself, I don't want to start an issue in case your parents are listening now.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's always going to be a part of my bringing up, so.
What's your plan for after college? Are you going to move to L.A. and try to, you know, direct, you know, sci-fi thrillers?
Hopefully, yeah. I'm interested in doing anything at this point. I love documentary, you know, but... You know, anything that's a good story.
Are you worried that your first film being Hypothesis puts you in a conspiracy category? Like, do you feel like you'll be blackballed by the establishment for, trying to expose some of their cockroaches?
Well, I'm not too worried. I felt like Hypothesis was more of a biopic that was really interesting, you know? And, I just figure if people want to think it's kooky or whatever, then that's their prerogative, and I'm not going to let it affect, where I want to go.
It seems like when someone confronts profoundly different opinions other than their own worldview, they tend to be just like, it just, the yawning almost like a meditation of, just like a widening of the brain or whatever. Do you notice that? Do you find your films effective in breaking new people into it?
I think so. I think it takes a really interesting approach, where it's not like, I didn't want to like force a certain viewpoint. Mm-hmm. I just kind of wanted to let the audience, come up with their own conclusions, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. But I do find
it comes off very non-preachy.
Yeah.
Which is difficult in such an explosive topic. But yeah. I see it exactly as equivalent to JFK investigation. It's always, some guy who's in a parking garage with a weird haircut and glasses falling off his face has done the research. He's seen the bodies. He knows. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's quite fascinating.
Is it weird being in that tradition?
A little bit. It makes for good storytelling, for sure. I find it interesting that people are so resistant to alternative views. I went to a university, and all of our professors taught us to, think with an open mind, and that was the point of going to school. And so, that kind of helped me accept what Steve was saying and really kind of get interested. Mm-hmm. And when it comes to 9/11, it's really hard to look into because it's such a sensitive subject. But it's almost like it should be treated as a court case. You have one side or the other side, and it's the consequences of it being right or wrong are us going to war, and affecting thousands of lives. So in that sense, it's maybe we should look at every avenue.
It seems people are starting to get keen on the fact that the end game of a lot of the people in power is war. That's the end game. That's what they want. And so, whatever kind of churning manipulations they have to do, or whatever, things they have to put on the news, what they want, what they're selling is war, and they want you to buy it. And now with Syria, finally, it seems like the people are starting to get wise collectively. But this was really the first thing where they wanted another Gulf War, and it's like, how are we going to make that happen? How are we going to, ugh.
Yeah, it'd be nice if there was a subpoena-powered investigation that could really look into everything and...
The House of Representatives set up a committee to investigate the murders of President Kennedy and Martin Luther King, Jr.
I do want to make very clear, yes,
because you're
that I have no identity, no knowledge of the identity of those persons.
Because you're afraid for your own life and your family's safety, aren't you?
Well, I naturally am quite concerned in that regard.
The CIA guys, they were like, yeah, there was probably a conspiracy, and that was the end of the Supreme Court hearing on JFK. And then also, same thing for Martin Luther King. One CIA guy was found civilly responsible for MLK's assassination.
Someone was left in the room and was recorded in the act of sexual intercourse. And they assumed it was Dr. King.
So the FBI took it one more nasty step. When Dr. King won the Nobel Prize, the FBI mailed an anonymous package to Dr. King's office. On it, highlights from the sex tapes with an ominous note.
You are a colossal fraud and an evil, vicious one at that. The American public will know you for what you are, an evil, abnormal beast. King, you are done.
The implication was that this was supposed to provoke him to suicide.
Yet King was unmoved by the FBI's truly dirty tricks.
Over 13 years ago, the only trial ever held concerning the murder of Martin Luther King Jr. was concluded. This was a real live trial between the King family and the conspirators who killed Martin Luther King. This was real. In 1999, a jury found U.S. government agencies guilty of assassinating MLK on a balcony in Memphis in 1968. After hearing from 70 witnesses, including Lloyd Jowers, who owned Jim's Grill from which the shot was fired and assisted the sniper, the jury took less than an hour to decide that 1. Multiple government agencies were responsible for the murder. 2. James Earl Ray, the man who we've always been told pulled the trigger, had nothing to do with it.
Basically, the CIA had to pay out the family a bunch of money because they probably did it. My problem is, these people aren't... Then it's not like we take all the bad muck out of Congress and then, you know, chop their heads off in a football stadium and then go, it's over now. We and have a jubilee, clear all debt, and then it's reset. They're still in there. And there's been this Gestapo still in there since then. And since longer than that ago. So, I don't know. That's the way I see it. What's your views on how the... On if this is true, if 9/11 was an inside job, what does it look like inside the top of those, you know, meetings?
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's really hard to
Who's
say,
Who's running
too.
The show?
Right, yeah. That's
Brett
a
Smith.
Tough one. that's a tough one. You know, you just look at the trend line of corporate interests, that sort of thing. You know, I'm always reminded of the... what. The Woodward and Bernstein, you know, like the film, the Robert Redford film, when he's like, follow the money, you know, and I kind of feel like that's what we should do. We should really follow the money trail and just see, you know, if there's any other interest vested in this event, you know, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. So it'd be nice if someone would do that.
Industries exploded. Security industry, defense industry, those exploded. Mm-hmm. It seems like the money. It seems like they just... Sometimes a rock band will have like a PR event where they'll like stop a highway and then just rock out just for publicity for their band. Well, you know, when your thing is war, when that's what you want, imagine what your PR events are. Domestic terrorism. How is this experience of making Hypothesis change your view of news?
I was filming Steven do a talk, and there was a reporter from Deseret News who attended and then had to leave early, and we exchanged some contact info, and then he called me up later to like tell him like what the rest of the talk was. Like, he didn't even stay for the whole thing, he wasn't able to. And I just thought that was kind of funny, like that he's reporting this event and he didn't even like stay for the whole thing. He's just kind of taking my word for it.
Also news, like watching news in general, like when you watch news,
yeah,
what do you think about...
Well, being in documentary film, I can see that that you're, when you do a documentary, and this is what I love about it, is that you can spend a lot more time on a subject, getting like all the information. Whereas, I imagine news organizations are pressed to meet a deadline, you know, and they just kind of quickly sort of gloss over a story when there's like a lot more.
To what degree does the university believe Dr. Jones may be casting an unfavorable light on the LDS Church?
It is concern whenever the professor brings the university into their personal concerns.
All of my papers on 9/11 have been thoroughly peer-reviewed. I wouldn't have it any other way.
This is after Chuck Hagel got behind the podium.
As we all know, in the coming days, Congress will debate how to respond the most recent chemical weapons attack in Syria. A large-scale sarin gas assault perpetrated by the Syrian government against its own people. We concluded that the United States should take military action against Syria because of what the Assad regime has done.
I don't care what someone says while standing behind a podium with a gold eagle encrusted onto it. Not one American citizen wants America to attack Syria. Syrian citizens were gassed. Sounds like they need medical care, not bombs. Oh wait, Americans need medical care. So let's take some of that bomb money that Chuck Hagel wants to spend on attacking Syria. Let's put it in some American ghettos. Sir, your speech didn't get me. Now, when Obama's top advisors, they're always the top advisors, the biggest sociopaths out there. are like, we gotta go to Syria. You know what? I want some action. I want some war. I want some war.
People are sick of war. At least I want to think that. So I was glad to see that it didn't happen. I guess I'm still holding my breath. But
where is this going?
Man, that's hard to say. I like Bill Hicks and like George Carlin. You know? It's almost like George Carlin's point of view is like the shit's too high. Like, and we're just like circling the drain. And so like, and as we get closer and closer, the circles get smaller and smaller. You know,
and it's like right after we can't get into Syria, then we have to raise the debt ceiling because, oh, now there's a government shutdown.
Right.
You think that's all signs that we're a circle in the drain?
Yeah, I think so. I think, you know, maybe some change will happen here pretty soon. But it's really interesting to just kind of sit back and watch it all go down and just kind of be the guy sitting in the back of the classroom who's like the class clown, just kind of making fun of them. I'm just sitting here watching the wheels go round and round. I really love to watch them roll.
That risk of chemical weapons proliferation poses a direct threat to our friends, our partners, and to U.S. personnel in the region.
Those guys were in hog heaven out there. You understand, man? They had a big weapons catalog opened up. What's G12 do, Tommy? Well, it says here it destroys everything but the fillings in their teeth.
We cannot afford for Hezbollah or any terrorist group determined to strike the United States to have incentives to acquire or use chemical weapons. A century-old international norm against the use of chemical weapons. A norm that has helped protect the United States homeland.
And everyone got excited about the technology, and I guess it was pretty incredible watching a missile fly down an air vent. Pretty unbelievable. But couldn't we feasibly use that same technology to shoot food at hungry people? You know what I mean? Fly over Ethiopia, there's a guy that needs a banana.
About the threat, the real threat. The real threat. The real threat.
I really wanted to get to the bottom of this, about what happened on 9/11. I wasn't about to give up. It occurred to me that if we looked in the World Trade Center dust, that we should be able to see some residue from the explosive. We saw those clouds of dust formed as the buildings came down. I'm just sitting here watching the wheels go round and round.
You're not very political, you're just a filmmaker like me. Yeah. You know, a master propagandist, you know, a maker of stories, a weaver of our own worldview into cinema.
Yeah.
Or podcasts. But my question is, what's your prescription?
Man, I don't know. I just know that the system we have isn't the best we can do, like I said earlier. And you know, if we're gonna be like truly civilized, we need to figure out this, you know, military-industrial complex, corporatism thing that seems to be going on, and, you know, hopefully, like, move on from there.
Yeah. You know, I just don't get why someone is like, okay, I got money. I want to start a company. I like, you know how, like, people, like, have their arms, like, on their body, and, you know what I mean, in general? I want to, like, blow them right off. I want to start a bomb company, you know? I want to start... Where, like, missiles, like, go into people's houses and just irradiate everyone's mind. Like, their brains boil before they even come out their ears. That's what I want to get into. And, like, imagine the kind of sociopath you would have to be to want to develop, like, ever-increasing with speed, faster and faster ways to boil brains before they come out of the head. Like, in the most advanced bombs that are operated by drones... Who the fuck is it that's getting into this field? And couldn't they just be put into a different track, you know? A more productive track.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Fucking nailing solar panels on schools, you cocksuckers.
Sorry, that's not profitable, so we can't go down that road.
Yeah.
But, no, yeah, it's like, I really want to feel like people genuinely don't want war. It's just this weird, like,
it's become this weird profitable industry that that Eisenhower warned us about.
We have been compelled to create a permanent armaments industry of vast proportions. Added to this, 3.5 million men and women are directly engaged in the defense establishment. Now, this conjunction of an immense military establishment and a large arms industry is new in the American experience. The total influence, economic, political, even spiritual, is felt in every city, every state house, every office of the federal government. We must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex. The potential for the disastrous rise of misplaced power exists and will persist. We must never let the weight of this combination endanger our liberties or democratic processes.
Have you ever seen the Vice, like Vice channel on YouTube?
Yeah.
They did this really crazy documentary where they went to Jordan, and I forget what it's called, but it's this like, it's like the Comic-Con of like warfare, where all the generals go to like buy the latest smart missile.
Right.
And
yeah,
they're like
yeah, yeah.
all using it. It's like, it's the weirdest manifestation of the military industrial complex I've ever seen. It's like
they have a convention.
Yeah.
To be like, da 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 da, these are our new line of bombs.
Exactly.
And like models like wheel these like smart drones down a runway wearing like with their side boob falling out, like, ooh, you know, I'm a fancy model. Look at how this is going to irradiate orphans. Da 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 da. This is what KBR has. This is what Raytheon is making. Ooh. You know, brain poison. Ooh, you know?
Yeah, it's so bizarre.
And then the fucking these fat cat, like, generals wearing brown with all these medals across it. Like, oh, I'm a general. I'm a top advisor. You know what I like? I like those fucking brain-splitting bombs over there. Yeah, that really gets my mode.
Over 450 rounds a minute. So I'm here to see the hit-to-kill technology. I don't know if you're familiar with it. But it's a missile that goes up and shoots tactical ballistic missiles out of the sky. These are my two daughters.
How much depleted uranium you got under that hood? Let's go to Bohemian Grove and masturbate on each other after seeing Moloch, the fucking owl god.
In 1989, journalist Philip Weiss managed to sneak into the Grove. In his article for Spy magazine, Weiss describes the situation. CEOs, celebrities, and government officials were partying with elaborate performances, round-the-clock drinks, songs, and speeches. The opening ceremony, called the Cremation of Care, is one of the strangest performances. In this ceremony, people dressed as priests bear the crypt of a symbolic Mr. Dull Care to the edge of the Grove's lake. More characters emerge at the base of a 40-foot-tall statue of an owl. These characters sing a ceremonial song, and more spectacles occur. Each year, the Owl of Bohemia instructs the members to burn the crypt of Mr. Dull Care with the eternal flame of fellowship. Today, it is one of the most exclusive clubs in the United States. The waiting list for membership is decades long, and the membership roster includes numerous influential men, U.S. presidents, foreign dignitaries, writers like Mark Twain, and businessmen like Henry Ford. Each year, the members gather with their guests for a 16-day-long closed-door celebration.
It's fucked up, people. What I'm saying is, if you're not paranoid, you're fucking stupid. Look around. Imagine if you, okay, were trying to find out what your government was doing. You just installed a new modem. You're trying to figure it out. You're going on a Twitter feed. You're trying to figure it, you know, it's all, you don't really know how the internet works. Your family's very poor. And then a missile goes through your window and kills everybody, including you. Is that cool? Is that fucking cool? Well, that's what's going on. Like, just like, know what, people don't, they go, oh, that's acceptable human casualties in war. Acceptable human cat. Yeah, when you're fucking eating a burrito at lunchtime that was given to you by a fucking delivery guy into a fucking shady underground Pentagon lair, it's fucking acceptable. When you're some kid trying to get internet, trying to figure out what's going on in this crazy world, and then his parents are liquidated while trying to make him eggs downstairs, that sucks. And if you have a drone go through someone's house, you're an asshole. That's what you are. You're an asshole.
Yeah, but it's so, like, skewed in our media that we're just like desensitized to think that like everything we're doing over there is just and right, and like all the bad guys are getting hit, you know?
Yeah.
And it's just like, I think I read somewhere that the Predator drones have like a 2% accuracy rating or something. And it's really hard to like take that all in and just be like, what?
And then when they're not accurate, it's like, what does that mean? Oh, so you were trying to get that guy's house and then you got his neighbor's house? What did that neighbor do? That's acceptable here, you know? 2% right. accuracy sounds like they're just fucking demons of chaos. These fucking hellfire missiles. That's what they're called. They're trying to pump chaos energy into the fucking solar sphere of the planet. Like, what are these fucking demons? And then we were talking also about propaganda, you know, and how pervasive it is in subtle ways.
Mr. Secretary, what message are we sending to Iran and Hezbollah and North Korea when the president announces he thinks we should take military action, but he's going to wait 9 days for Congress to come back before he takes any action, and then he goes off and plays a round of golf? What message does that send to the rebels on the ground whose lives are in danger and to our enemies who are watching?
As a documentarian making hypothesis, that's kind of propaganda of glorifying this 9/11 truth hero guy as a folk hero or a cult hero, an anti-hero, you know? Mm-hmm. So you kind of made your own propaganda in a certain way, but you know what I mean? It's like, but you're imparting a view that's abnormal, that's against the mainstream, that's, you know what I mean? So when you only have, when you have the same people who are trying to sell you toothpaste in control of your information, and they just keep pumping one theory of the world, you know, it's really opens your mind, expands your mind to see a different view.
It really does, yeah. And I can see what you're saying with how people might view my film as propaganda. But, you know, obviously I didn't go in with that kind of intention. It was just an interesting biopic and a really fascinating story that just kind of like opens the doors to another way of thinking about what happened on 9/11.
The guys who create the crisis are not going to solve it for you in a way that's going to lead to freedom.
But then inevitably, if you say to yourself, okay, the government planned 9/11, who are these people? Then you start going, you know, it doesn't stop there. If you can't deny that there was those dust samples had some of this residue that was, it's an incredibly dynamic explosive. Mm-hmm. More explosive than known nanothermite explosive. So it is just reeks of a black science project with fucking discarded weird Pentagon funding, you know. And also, what I like about the Pentagon is they're always like, oh, conspiracy theorists are crazy. Conspiracy theorists are crazy. What do you think people do in boardrooms in the Pentagon? Every one of their fucking meetings is a conspiracy. We're going to conspire to have these drones. You know, all that shit gets drafted in the fucking... Then it goes to the Ministry of Propaganda in the Pentagon. And they're just conspiring. How are we going to shape the story? How are we going to sell it to the public? How are we going to do this war? How are we going to remove those heads from those civilians? That's what they're in there doing. That's a fucking conspiracy. That's a boot room full of conspiracies. Mm-hmm. And if one person goes, hey, I think that's going on in there, then, oh, you're a fucking cuckoo. You know?
Right, yeah. And like you said, that's kind of why I like the approach Steven took, was because he was just more or less like, you know, here's the science. I'm not going to point the finger, but we'll let the chips fall where they may.
Kevin Ryan these days is another. He was actually working at Underwriters Laboratories, and he was responsible for doing some of the early research on 9/11, trying to figure out what happened. So doing that actual science. And when he started questioning, and maybe we should look into this explosive hypothesis, he was fired just for asking too many questions. And it's like, that's not what science is, you know? So now Kevin Ryan's very interested in a list of names and of who the fuck is responsible. So
Bush's first cousin, Jim Peer, Michael Cherkasky, Craig Stapleton, L. Paul Brimmer. This is a really interesting company. It's called Science Applications International Corporation, or SAIC. And SAIC, as I said, provided all these people to the NIST investigation. They're all listed. This huge group of people are listed in the report as being authors of the report, essentially. But SAIC has this long history at the World Trade Center. In 1986, they did an evaluation of threats to the World Trade Center, and they proposed that a big bomb in the basement, just exactly like the one that happened 7 years later in 1993, would do a lot of damage, right? So they provided this scenario. And in 1993, when it did happen, it was SAIC that provided the official explanation for what happened. And then in 2001, they're hired after 2001 to help NIST write this report on what happened on 9/11. But SAIC, they make nanothermites. They have employees like Robert Gates, who's our current defense secretary. They did. Jerome Hauer, who was the OEM director at the World Trade Center. John Deutsch was a CIA director, and so on and so on.
The FEMA was Johnny on the spot on 9/11. How did that happen? Remember, after Katrina, they were slow. But on 9/11, they were right there. In fact, they were there the day before. As That's true. And it was admitted by Mayor Giuliani. He says, on September 12th, this pier was going to have a drill. So the people gathered on the 10th. You see, and this guy was one of the drill. We arrived late Monday night on the 10th and, of course, went into action on the 11th.
I know that Stephen was... He was one of their most popular science professors. Like, you know, when physics opened up for registration, it would just get, like, filled because everyone knew that Stephen was such a good teacher, and he got some awards for it, too.
Yeah, and you can even look at his original presentation on YouTube. He's just, like, giving you the information so matter-of-factly. Mm-hmm. He breaks it down so, like, he's a professional teacher. He breaks shit down science-wise and makes it so simple. That's why he was so dangerous to the establishment, you know, because it's like, this guy can actually explain it. And, you know, I think that still the fucking Pentagon, everyone in top has to be fucking scared that some professor can just put this on YouTube and it's there forever. You know, just like Carlos Mencia, it's put on YouTube that he's a fucking joke thief. His career's fucked forever, and so is the government. The government's career is over in the secret business, all right? You spooks are fucked. The internet has fucked you, because one of you spooks can put an anonymous mask on and tell all the secrets you have. So you're fucked, and it's just a matter of time before you realize that. It's just a matter of time before the system resets, I think. I'm very optimistic for the future because of the internet.
Yeah, definitely. It would be nice if there was, like, another deep throat character that would just, like you said, kind of spill everything. But, yeah, maybe a further investigation would be helpful.
What do you think? And look at this Snowden thing, you know. All he said was, hey, I have proof that the government has access to all your emails. They type in your name and they say, hey, we want dirt on this guy. They can listen to they can read every single email of yours. And that's the equivalent of, like, the Gestapo opening your fucking letters, reading them, and then putting them, you know what I mean? Only now they can search by keywords. So if you talk dirty to your girlfriend about your big dick or whatever, they type in big dick, boom, they can find that word and then have all your embarrassing, you know what I mean? So limit your sexual correspondences on Gmail.
No text, sexting.
If you're going to send a dick pic, like, disguise it like picture of flowers, and then no one's gonna read. You know what I mean? It's all about how you organize your indiscretions.
Yeah, paint it green
by
keywords. It
takes. Oh, I want to talk to you about Mormonism, Brett Smith, because you were raised Mormon, which is unusual to people not from Utah. What kind of things in your life happen, like, instead of your confirmation and things like that? What do you guys go through?
Well, there's, like, you know, I wasn't hugely active, but, you know, like, obviously I was baptized, and it was just kind of a weekly, you know, church thing, and then your goal is to get, like, you know, priesthood eventually, and I think that's, like, one of the higher forms that you can earn in within the religion.
So you can be a priest... Meaning that you start performing over services or whatever?
Yeah, stuff of that matter. Like, I'm not, like I said, I'm not hugely knowledgeable because I haven't attended that much, but, you know.
What do you mean you haven't attended that much? I thought you were raised.
Yeah, I was raised and, you know, kind of was inactive for a while, then took high school seminary and became inactive again. So it's kind of been like a back and forth thing.
What are kind of the nuttier things about Mormonism that maybe turned you off about it? Is it the, what's with the bulletproof underwear, this kind of thing, you know?
Well, I just know it's like a sacred thing that they do. They wear this to protect themselves against, like, you know, dangers of any sort, really. It's kind of a spiritual thing.
Name Joseph Smith was a Freemason and actually put a lot of Freemasonic symbolism and customs into Mormonism.
I've heard that, yeah, and I think it's pretty apparent. So I tend to think that's probably the case.
Apparent, yeah. How?
Well, like with the symbolism in the temples and stuff like that, you can see like a lot of the Freemasonic influence in the architecture, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. Because aren't there like all-seeing eyes and things like this all over the Mormon temples?
Mm-hmm.
Do you look into the more esoteric things like into Freemasonry?
It's all really fascinating. Even if it's just a bunch of older frat men who like kind of have toasts to themselves, you know, or whatever. It's still very fascinating.
But the rituals they do are very creepy. And, you know, there's this guy, I always talk about him, called Bill Schneblin, who, you know, started as a witch and he had a coven in the 70s. It was kind of, there was some black magic, whatever, and you can teach it or whatever. And so he had a coven. He was teaching witchcraft. And then he became a Freemason and he goes, oh, I know all this stuff. It's all witchcraft stuff. And then he went and he blew through the levels of Freemasonry because he was fucking a witch. And so, you know what I mean? When they say, I think like Christians being paranoid about Satanists, you know what I mean? I kind of got it when I heard Bill Schneblin talk about how he was a witchcraft so he could go up in Satanism and they pray to Lucifer, you know, Freemasons. And the only thing that got him out of it was Jesus.
Wow.
Just whatever. To look into Bill Schneblin's lectures, they'll fucking creep you out. And then he also said he was a Mormon for a while.
Really?
So I don't know if he's writing apocryphal tales, Forrest Gump style tales about himself, but he seems to know everything about, like, he's like some people you encounter know everything about Star Trek or whatever. Like, uh-huh. He knows everything about Freemasonry and the esoteric.
Well, as to whether or not there are many Satanists within the Masonic Order, I personally think there are. I know that virtually every high-level Satanist that I knew was also a Freemason. You look at the list of the men in this century who were the movers and shakers of occultism, witchcraft, and Satanism, and virtually every single one of them was a Freemason. That because of its very nature, it lends itself to having secret societies within secret societies. They can begin to sane out the people who are really interested in first the occult, and then they go through a little filtration process, and they find those that are interested in witchcraft, and then they filter them out even more, and they find those people that are into witchcraft that want to get into black witchcraft, which is, of course, Satanism. And all you have to do is look at the symbolism, especially within the Scottish Rite, and even within the York Rite and the Knights Templar Commandery, and you will see over and over again symbols that are used that are outright satanic. I mean, there's not even any question that these symbols are satanic.
He said he saw a big green lizard man in the bottom of the Mormon temple.
Wow.
Have you seen any of these big green lizard men?
Unfortunately, I haven't, man. I would love to, though.
Have you been to Salt Lake City and on a pilgrimage? Mm-hmm. Was it spiritual?
Not necessarily. I've been to Salt Lake, you know, like, I live near there, so I'm always going there to hang out with friends or whatever, but, yeah.
They keep a clean city,
mm-hmm.
Mormons. I'm just very worried by anyone too influenced by one book.
Because
I wonder if they don't know that how many books are written.
That's true, yeah. There are quite a few, and yeah, I feel like we should all broaden our worldview. You know, anytime you kind of stick to one possibility, I feel like it's very limiting, like you said. So, you know, like, think with an open mind. Like, look into everything. Look into what the evidence shows, scientifically, you know.
Any activism in your future?
It remains to be seen.
Are you gonna be the guy who just like has a blowhorn in the middle of a mall and is just ranting and raving in a wheelchair and when you're 70? Is that gonna be how you end up?
maybe if things don't change, I'll have to resort to that, you know? Like,
that's my plan A.
I figure when you're old, you should just experience anything because you're, like, you're old, and that gives you carte blanche to be whatever you want, you know?
Uh-huh.
So, like, maybe if I'm in that mindset, that's the way I'll go. Who knows? Maybe I'll do it for entertainment value, too, just to, like, get reactions out of people.
Just a bunch of, like, preteens walking around with Justin Bieber being pumped into their ears, and you're going to want to shake them out of their fucking stupor that they're in.
Exactly.
That's how I'm going out. With a diaper, I'm going to sit there, I'm going to take four shits in the same diaper, and I'm going to let people know a little thing about the 9/11 truth when they walk by me, okay?
Why not? You only live once.
Brett Smith, it's been an absolute pleasure. You came a real long way to be on the podcast. I'm honored. I feel bad I was late.
It's all good.
Is it hypothesisthemovie.com? How can people reach out?
Yeah, I'd love it if you'd visit the website, hypothesisfilm.com.
Okay.
You can find out, like, all the information about screenings, if one's in your hometown or whatever. You can buy the DVD if you'd like.
Hey, help support this guy.
Yeah. Yeah, it's full of extras.
This guy's OG.
But, you know, if not, I understand. It's also free on YouTube. So, you know, as long as you watch it and like it, that's all that matters to me.
That's really beautiful. It's like, you know, once it was on YouTube, you're like, fuck it. I'm not going to fight these people. I'm just going to let them. I just want it to go out there and open some minds.
Yeah, why not?
That's beautiful. Thanks to my guest, Brett Smith.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Cool, man.